No relationships to disclose. Just first wanted to acknowledge my my co-authors and co-investigators on this project, especially Ben Blount at CDC, who did the urine analysis for this project. A number of my colleagues at the California Department of Health Services, California Department of Public Health, I'm sorry. Also some community partners, Comité Cívico de Valle at our study site, and the promotores that helped conduct the study, Commonweal, and then also the California Department's Toxic Substances Control, who did the water analysis. And also wanted to acknowledge funding from the CDC Environmental Health Tracking Program branch for funding. So I can't really see this all that well, but I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about perchlorate contamination, just give you some context. So let's see if I can get the, here's the pointer. So up here in Nevada, there was a Keir McGee factory that produced ammonium perchlorate. And this is a compound that's used in rocket fuels primarily, you know, like for weapon system delivery and, you know, space shuttle. So this was this factory up in this area, and it's also found as a natural contaminant in soils in some places, from soils imported from South America. But let's see if I can go back up here. In this situation, there was contamination, a large release of perchlorate into the Las Vegas Wash, which then went into Lake Mead. And then this goes into the Colorado River, winds its way down, and it supplies water for about 10 to 15 million people in California, Arizona, and Nevada. And then it also comes into this All-American Canal in Imperial County. And this supplies primarily, you know, the primary irrigation water for, this is a huge agricultural growing region. Not that many people are familiar with this part of California, but here's San Diego for reference. But if you drive out east over this little mountain range here into Imperial Valley, it's kind of a retirement haven for some people. It's, you know, very warm all year. It's actually miserable in the summertime. Never want to go there. But it's one of the poorest counties actually in California. It's only a population of about 150,000, and it borders it's not on this map, but it borders right over the border of the capital of Baja California, Mexicali, which is a very large city. But this is a large agricultural region. It's primarily Hispanic, and it's a primary monolingual population. So before I get, you know, back into the details of the study, so, you know, why are we concerned about perchlorate? Well, one thing we know, when we're talking about absorbing high doses of perchlorate, and that when we talk about high doses, we're talking about getting milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day in that type of range. This can inhibit iodine uptake, it impairs thyroid function, and it can impair neurological development in utero. But we're seeing more recently that even small changes in thyroid hormones levels are of concern, as there's been a couple studies showing that even mild hypothyroidism during pregnancy has been associated with some subtle cognitive deficits in children. So I'm going to go through a couple of just slides. These were slides that I stole from my health educators that they used for our report back. I just thought they were really great to illustrate, kind of fun to go through. But you know, just kind of the basics of the importance of the thyroid gland. So the thyroid gland needs iodine, which is represented by that little green circle, to make thyroid hormones, which, you know, they're important for metabolism of the body, you know, controlling your temperature. And it's also important for proper development in fetuses, infants, and children. So, you know, here's the little iodine coming up, and the hormones. And there's besides perchlorate, which inhibits blocking iodine from the thyroid gland, there's two other compounds which sometimes aren't measured in these studies, but we decided to go ahead and measure them too, because they can also inhibit the thyroid function. And that's thiocyanate, which is... you're going to detect that from environmental tobacco smoke exposure primarily. Also, I think there's some dietary sources. And then nitrate, which you know is another water contaminant. So these, you know, iodine gets blocked by these other compounds. And so that, I thought that was really cool. All right, so in summary, these compounds prevent thyroid gland from using iodine, and it can reduce the amount of the thyroid hormone that's made and potentially cause some health problems. And so having more iodine, well, that was the fourth thing we measured too. We also measured iodine in urine. So we wanted to have a find out about these individuals, how much iodine they were really getting from their diet also. So this was a convenient sample, 31 individuals. We asked them for a 24-hour urine sample. And also during the time period we were interested in, we asked them to collect any samples of local produce they consumed. So we really emphasized, you know, this was produce that you would buy like at a, you know, a truck that was unloading your household or at a farmer's market, and then any drinking water samples. They completed a short questionnaire and a food diary. This the sample was primarily female. It was almost all adults. I think there was like one or two teenagers. And we paid them $100 to participate in the study. I mean, if you think about carrying a big, you know, urine crate with you, I mean, you're going to a party and you're just like lugging your urine around with you. I mean, you know, you deserve to get $100 for that, you know. So, and we got a lot of participants, and they, you know, really complied with the methodology. So that was good. So we measured those four compounds I mentioned in urine. You know, and 24-hour urine is really preferable in doing what's called a spot urine collection, where you just take one sample, maybe on a morning void. Measuring perchlorate then in the produce and drinking water. And then, as I mentioned before, the promotoras at this local community group that we've worked with a lot, Comité Cívico de Valle, they helped us both to recruit the participants and to collect the data. And here's just a couple of pictures. You know, here we are going to households, and here's all the, you know, the urine, produce samples, and water in the freezers. Some people gave us, like, here, have a watermelon too, you know, so took those home. And here's our, we did do a pretty detailed report back. We put together a very long packet of information for the participants that told them all the results of all the compounds, gave them a lot of background, and then we went in person and did a presentation. They were available, we hired a clinician that could meet with them, so almost all of them went and talked to the clinician. And if the clinician, after concluding talking to them, if the clinician was going to suggest that they needed further like thyroid function testing, then we'd be available to pay for that testing if their insurance wouldn't cover it, for example. So I mentioned it was I think it's about 65% female, and it was actually kind of as you can see from this chart, it was actually kind of a range of educational attainment. It wasn't just high school grads and less. There was actually, you know, 45% that had some college, although, you know, almost 25% had no high school. So that's quite a different mixed bag of educational levels, which also made it a challenge when, you know, there's kind of another whole presentation you can do on the report back, but that made a challenge too. It's like, oh, we have people with no high school education and some college, so that made it a challenge. Okay, so here's the results. So all the water samples that we, 68 water samples, there was only two that were positive. They had levels of 2.5 micrograms per liter. The California and a few other states, I think Massachusetts and a couple others, actually have standards for perchlorate in drinking water. Not many other states do. So California's maximum contaminant level is 6 micrograms per liter. We got to collect 79 produce samples, so, you know, each participant sometimes gave us more than one produce sample. And those range from non-detect to 18, 16 parts per billion. And there was two produce samples that we found the highest perchlorate levels. One was Nepalis cactus, 1398 ppb. And that's been, you know, kind of those succulent plants have been found to be high in perchlorate in previous studies. And then also this produce called Quelites. And I think we had some very limited data on like whether this was, some of them people got stuff out of their gardens. And I think this was a case where people grew this in their garden. These are like, you know, Mexican greens, lamb's ears. I don't know what similar to the West or the kind of European produce is relation to, but it's a greens that can be consumed. So that had the highest, very high levels. This was the concentration of perchlorate in the urine. These are the geometric means for the sample. So you can see the study participants, it was about 6.5 micrograms per liter. You can see the confidence interval there. And we compare, if you compare that to the NHANES, this is about 70%, the point estimate's about 70% higher than the point estimate you get from NHANES data. When we looked at the thiocyanate and the nitrate levels, those were below what you'd expect from NHANES, so they actually had lower levels of thiocyanate and nitrate, so those didn't seem to be of much concern. The iodine levels were around 158 micrograms per day, which is slightly higher than 150 micrograms per day, which is the recommended daily allowance for iodine, but there were still quite a number of women, and we had probably about half of the women were women of reproductive age, although none of them said they were pregnant at the time of the interview. And quite a few of those women, and actually one that you'll see that had a pretty high dose, had lower iodine levels, lower than 150 micrograms per day. So then you can compute, the other thing we did was you can compute the dose that actually someone gets. And you do this by multiplying the concentration times the 24-hour urine output and body weight. So that the units for this then is in micrograms per kilogram of body weight per day. And this is where we can really start comparing this to some of these action levels and other reference levels. So. You can see our study dose then exceeds the doses that were computed in the last NHANES that looked at perchlorate. So we also had some data from our survey on dairy servings. So what we did was just link each participant's questionnaire results on dairy servings and related it back to the dose of perchlorate they were getting. So you can see this when you do this categorical analysis, see some indication of a relationship between total number of dairy servings and dose of perchlorate. You know, this has been, dairy has been really looked at too as another food that really gets, that really concentrates perchlorate. And when I ran this in a linear regression with just, number of doses at a time, it came up significant. And then I also went ahead and then grouped all the produce concentrations and related that to perchlorate dose in the participants. And so again, you can see that this is the categorical results. And when you see these three groupings, you can see some more evidence of dose response with perchlorate levels in produce and perchlorate dose. This was significant in a non-parametric Kruskal-Wallis test. So the other thing we compared this to was the U.S. U.S. EPA reference dose. That's at 0.7 micrograms per kilogram per day. We didn't find any of our participants exceeded that dose. But in California, the California EPA computes an acceptable daily dose of 0.37 micrograms per kilogram per day, and we had three individuals that exceeded that acceptable daily dose. So we did find that these had higher perchlorate doses compared with some national reference ranges. You know, since this was such a limited sample, we don't really want to make a lot of conclusions about, you know, the source, although we did, you know, we did see some relationships with dairy products just on interview data and with produce samples, and actually tested some samples that had very high levels. So, you know, our recommendations on this project, basically, I mean, the US EPA is continuing cleanup efforts in the Colorado River of perchlorate, and it would just be interesting to continuing to monitor this population to see if doses go down over time. And this does raise issues of environmental equity, because this is a, you know, a low-income minority population living in kind of this disfranchised area. So, you know, this remains an environmental justice concern in California. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Thank you. Yeah, I'm back.
As I understood the presentation, you looked at the urine concentration, 24 hours of chloride, and used that as a basis for estimating the dose. Can you explain the pharmacokinetic justification for that?
Well, you know, you know, you are just getting this, you know, one snapshot at time, but you are getting a 24-hour picture. This is a standard way of estimating dose. It's a gold standard way, unless you have the resources to do, you know, a week long or multi-week 24-hour urine collection, which seems pretty impractical. We also were kind of under budgeted on this project, but we were still able to do 24-hour urine collection. But basically, by getting the perchlorate concentrations from the urine, by being able to look at the creatinine levels and the output, the urine output, there's formulas after you multiply that by body weight for estimating dose. And there's a number of papers that give the background on that. If you're interested, I can give you the references. Yes. No, that wasn't part of the study, although there has been some other tests of water in the past, but I don't have the results right with me to tell you about it. Yes?
Where was the dairy coming from?
Yeah, her question is, where does the dairy come from? You know, this could be bought at local supermarkets, and, you know, that could be coming from all over the place. You know, it might be from California, it might be outside. So we didn't, you know, ask them for samples of dairy and didn't test dairy as part of this. Yes? Can you repeat that, please? They did meet with the clinician, but none of them were referred for thyroid testing. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.